Hi, Jason Rink here with Cancel Proof Podcast, and I also have my co-host, Paul Escandone. Hello, Paul.
Hello, everybody. It's good to be live with you. First live stream we're testing out. We're doing the Rumble thing. Rumble did not offer us $100 million, but, you know, maybe a couple bucks would be nice.
That's right. And what I will say is that since the last time we podcasted, YouTube did delete our channel. So, you know, hey, I don't know if that's the fastest a podcast has been deleted from Facebook, you know, like eight episodes in.
But so we didn't even get our four strikes, right? We got two strikes and then just gone. Just they were like, listen, guys, we'll save you the time.
Yeah.
We'll just get you off the platform now. Don't worry about it. If you're not we don't want you.
We didn't even post our video with Nick Fuentes, actually. So
I know. I wanted to go out with the bang.
Yeah, we didn't even have a chance to. And so we didn't do that. And but yes, we were deleted from YouTube. So we've reoriented again. We are live streaming to Rumble right now. We are live streaming to Facebook. We are live streaming to Twitter. And what we're talking about today is, I think, a really important story. And, you know, Joe Rogan has been all over the news lately, you know, a lot of coverage about the Joe Rogan controversy. And some of you have been following this. Some of you may not have been following this story. So I wanted to do a quick recap of sort of what's happened up till today. And today's story is, you know, did the Department of Homeland Security just label Joe Rogan essentially as a terrorist threat? And I know that sounds very clickbaity, sounds like might be some hyperbole there, but the truth of the matter is what we're going to show you through this document that was released yesterday, and given the rhetoric coming from the Biden administration and the regime media, I don't think there's really any other way to describe it. And so what I want to do first is I want to just back the truck up with the Joe Rogan controversy. And I think the controversy starts with him having the two different doctors on, Dr. Robert Malone and then Dr. Peter, I'm going to get the name wrong, another doctor.
Peter McCullough.
Peter McCullough, yes. And so what I think happened is he had them on, and that was the, you know, the beginning of this. He had them on. Those videos went really viral, you know, tens of millions, I think 40, 50 million views. And those guests definitely went against the regime narrative when it comes to things around COVID. And so lots of people tuned in. Lots of people saw what was going on there. Joe Rogan's got a massive audience of 10, 11 million people listening regularly. And so I think the regime media and the administration sat up and took notice when that happened. Paul, did you listen to those episodes, either of those episodes?
Yeah, so I did listen to the Dr. Robert Malone episode in full. I think it was a touch over 3 hours. I haven't listened to the Peter McCullough one. I've meant to. And, you know, all I would say is I heard it early on as it was starting to go viral, as people were starting to talk about it. And there were some clips out there at the if you recall, the first big clip that hit was Dr. Robert Malone espousing this idea of mass formation psychosis. That really connected with a lot of people. They were, you know, like, hey, that kind of makes sense, right? We're in this world that doesn't make sense in a lot of ways. And the media is untrustworthy. The government is untrustworthy. We were told these vaccines were going to be, you know, awesome and do all these things. And then they didn't. And most people are just like, what the hell is going on? You know, and Joe Rogan is a source to get some information to help fill in the blanks, because you're not going to get the whole story if you just turn into ABC, CNN, NBC, Fox, and read the New York Times, Washington Post. You just aren't. So, you know, I remember listening to that episode. I was building a gym floor in my garage. I was like putting these little, like, you know, these 12 by 12 pieces together, building a gym in my garage. It took me hours, and I was listening to the whole thing, and it was fascinating. It was like man, he was not saying, don't take the vaccine, or here is a set of facts that support my narrative, do this instead of it, right? That's the thing. Like, he doesn't give you the prescription. He doesn't give you a prescription. He just says, look at all these facts. And 90 to 95% of the facts he's giving you is not stuff that's been reported by any mainstream media source, or it's so buried in something that you wouldn't even, like some sort of medical journal, some sort of medical documentation. He's bringing that out and serving it up and saying, hey, let's talk about this stuff. I'm not allowed to talk about it anywhere. And so it was fascinating to me. I didn't hear any misinformation. It's possible he got a couple things wrong. 3 hours episode, long flow of discussion. But
And Paul, one of the big arguments is like, hey, what are Joe Rogan's credentials? What are his credentials? And it's like, wait a minute. Since when are talk show hosts credentialed? It's like, no, talk show hosts, they have people on with credentials. See, that's what they do.
Yeah,
they
and with Joe, you know, he's the first to tell you, I'm an effing dumbass idiot. Don't listen to me. And I want to give him way more credit than that. When you hear that episode and his follow-up questions, he's clearly well-read into the issue, both sides, all over the place, more so than most people I know. So, you know, he kind of does that, I think, to defeat, is a kind of a joke. I mean, he's a comedian, like, I'm a dumbass, don't listen to me. But he knows what the heck he's talking about.
Yeah.
In a way that if he was, you know, he has a lot of the information that a guy like Alex Jones has in his brain. Alex Jones is the commentator giving the audience the information. Joe Rogan is having conversations because that's the format he likes. And I think that makes him actually more, you know, watchable.
Yeah. And he is now being perceived with his massive audience as a huge threat to the regime media and to the establishment. And what's interesting is Joe Rogan is not technically a journalist, right? He is a podcast host. Okay. And he was an MMA announcer and he was on hosted Fear Factor. Okay. And so he's not.
And he brought down Carlos Mencia. He brought down that fraud con artist comedian, Carlos Mencia. Let's not forget that.
Now you're really testing my knowledge on Joe Rogan. You're going in the archives, but the point is that there's a void in investigative journalism and real journalism. And so we're in this weird place where Joe Rogan does this long podcast and people start tuning into that for what they used to think, you know, what they used to go to journalism for. They used to tune into that. And one thing I also want to say is that there's a real debate going on here around legitimacy. What we're seeing is that the mainstream media had legitimacy, was considered legitimate for so long. And in fact, a lot of these things about credentials, and when CNN complains that Joe Rogan can't just go have these guests on, he doesn't have a medical news desk verifying his facts. He's just winging it out there. They're throwing stones at the idea of legitimacy with Joe Rogan. And so that's what they've tried to do, is they've tried to take him down. But you know what the problem is, Paul? The mainstream media is having a legitimacy crisis like they've never had in history. And so a lot of people see this and they're like, wait a minute, the mainstream media is fake news. It's illegitimate. I know that. They're attacking the legitimacy of the Joe Rogan podcast, which has vastly, massively larger audience, showing that the market desires what he's dishing out there. So I think that's also at the fundamental basis of everything that we're going to talk about today and moving forward on this issue, which is that the regime media, they want to make sure they remain the source of legitimacy for information. They want to make sure that they remain the one place that can't be censored for misinformation, because we can look back at the last 2 years and we're going to say, wait, where did most of the real misinformation come from? It did not come from the Joe Rogans of the world. It came from the news desks at the big regime media operations that have been, you know, coasting on the fumes of their legitimacy for many, many decades.
Well, it came not just from the media organizations, but it came from those governmental agencies and the experts within the government, the science, so to speak, when they never questioned anything that these government sources were telling them, never did any sort of journalism to question, well, are you sure that masks work? You know, we know cloth masks don't work, but at first it was like, you got to wear your mask. Never a serious question about it. 6 feet apart. Why? Where does that come from? You know, the vaccine uptake, it's going to stop the spread of the virus. You know, well, how do you know? mRNA, that's new. How do we know? The trials never tested pregnancy in women. Like, that's another thing that Robert Malone talked about. One of the biggest things was that Pfizer never went into a hardcore clinical trial on what it does to fertility. And he explains this, they cobbled together some other things that are, it's understood that wasn't like the high level of what they normally do during a legitimate trial, but they were still able to present that as some data. But, you know, he said, you know, this is going to get technical, but like, you know, the way that this vaccine, the mRNA ones, get into your body is completely different. It uses lipids, and that is the vehicle for which it gets into your body. Well, they found, they saw that those lipids in women went to the female reproductive systems from the data that they saw in Israel after the fact, after everybody's taken it, at like a 30 to 40% uptake rate. That is like a hugely significant. Okay, what is that going to mean? Like, that's the big question, right? Is that going to affect birth rates? Is that going to affect fertility? Well, like, that's a good question to have. Any woman taking it should know that there's a 1 in 30-ish chance that those lipids that have never been done before on this mass scale in an mRNA vaccine will end up in her ovaries. I would want to know that. That's informed consent. And that's what the whole episode kind of came back to, informed consent. We don't have informed consent if we aren't talking about all these things. I will tell anybody, hey, you want to take the vaccine? Okay. Like, that's on you. But what you put into your body, in your arm, is going to end up in your ovaries. And you only have so many eggs in those ovaries, and then it's done. Like, that should matter to you. Now, if you have a bunch of comorbidities and you're probably, you don't want to die, okay. If you're a 13-year-old girl who is only a couple ovaries have ever come out and you're not at threat of dying, that's like, it's malpractice and evil to not let people know about that. And that's what he was doing by that podcast. And again, that's like what people didn't want to get out.
Yep. And it's why Pfizer's fighting so hard not to release these studies and going to court over it. I think they just lost again. I do want to say hi to our viewers right now. We do have a lot of people checking us out right now. I want to pull up this quick comment from Steve. You know, so wait, DHS calling Rogan a threat, saying he isn't a doctor, but Bill Gates isn't a doctor either. You know, it's funny that way. I think about Bill Gates sometimes and I'm like, you know, that guy asked himself if he could get, software on every computer desk in America. And then I think he had the idea, what if I could actually put an operating system in every human being? That would be amazing. And so now we see what Gates has been up to. But yeah, he's not a doctor.
Steve, Bill Gates is a chosen one. He has been blessed. He has been blessed by the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab. So clearly Bill Gates is a better person than Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan did not go through the Young Leadership Program like Justin Trudeau did and Macron did. And, you know, all the world leaders that are telling us lockdown, wear masks, take the shot while they go to parties with no masks and who knows what their vaccine status is.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's funny.
Clip that, for social.
Boom. Well, listen, it's like they're conflating the host of a show with the experts you bring on. Like, oh, Joe Rogan's got to be an expert for you to listen to him. It's like, no, he lets people who are experts talk. And so
like Tim Dillon.
What's that?
Like Tim Dillon.
Yeah, exactly.
Tim Dillon's funnier than Joe Rogan. That doesn't that's fine.
So the crisis of legitimacy that the mainstream media is having, once this happened and the narrative really started to get away, and listen, you don't have to agree with what McCullough and Malone were saying. You can think that those guys aren't legitimate. That's fine. Joe Rogan also had on, Sanjay Gupta, CNN's in-house guy, on the show. So Joe Rogan is not just having one side of this thing happen. But what happened is when this occurred, they realized that this got out in a big way. And so since then, what we have seen is a coordinated effort. And there are those who have documented this, started to come out. I know Sagar at Breaking Points broke this down. I also saw a nice Twitter thread about this, showing how now after this happened, you can see that there's a coordinated effort to try to knock the legs out from under Joe Rogan. Okay. And so what we saw is then we saw the artists coming out saying, hey, we're going to pull our music from Spotify. Okay. And so you had Neil Young followed by a bunch of other, you know, boomers who were going to pull their music from Spotify. That was creating a big deal. And so, you know, that got a bunch of press. Oh no, they're going to take that away. Well, and then Spotify basically said, well, we're not getting rid of Joe Rogan. And so people started to pull their music, right? And so what ended up happening is that fed a news cycle. Then the stock price of Spotify started going down. Well, so did almost all of the tech stocks. Okay. And so that fed into a narrative that, oh, wow, see, their stock price is going down because they have Joe Rogan. And so all of that started to happen. Then what I think happened after that,
Facebook's going down. That's what I want to know. 30% Facebook yeah. down, Twitter 40% down on the last year or so.
Well, they maybe it's because they allow people to put Joe Rogan posts up on their Facebook feeds, you know. But yeah, it's like so that whole was it's like a self-perpetuating narrative, and Joe Rogan was standing strong like initially. And he's under tremendous pressure, guys. Like, listen, this is playing with the big boys. You've got a lot of the powers that be trying to organize to destroy you, trying to get you to kowtow to the woke mob, trying to get you to not do what you want to do, you know, to stop doing what you've been doing for years that's made you successful and start to do self-censor. Okay. And so Joe Rogan ended up kind of not really apologizing, but I think what he said was, I'm going to start, Spotify is going to put some warnings on, misinformation warnings. Okay. And so that was the first move. All right. Well, that then I believe Joe Rogan moved and gave Spotify the permission to start removing past episodes. And so Spotify removed, I think, like 70 plus episodes. Not too long ago, just a few days ago. And it turned out that Joe Rogan was actually gave them the okay to do that. He was like in agreement about it, right? Well, then what bubbles up over the last couple of days is the Joe Rogan N-word controversy. And so we have this video that surfaces and gets all of this traction online of all of these out of context clips that Joe Rogan has used over the years using a racial slur. And so that is like sort of the cherry on top of the controversy. Okay. Like, you know, it's proceeded through a series of steps. Now we're at the racism card. And so I think what's interesting is that it's moving now from there into a whole nother dimension with this National Terrorism Advisory Bulletin that came out. I do want to play a couple of clips here though, really quick. Just to comment on a few things. So here's a clip from Morning Joe. I want to bring up, let me put this here in here. Boom. Okay. So this is going to give us a little bit of a recap of some things as well with a little bit of the regime commentary.
Podcaster Joe Rogan is responding to the controversy over his show that has led to artists pulling their work off the Spotify platform. Some of Rogan's guests have a history of spreading misinformation about COVID-19 and the vaccines. Here's part of the 10-minute video he posted to Instagram.
He's talking fast.
I think if there's anything that I've done that I could do better is have more experts.
I did put it on a little bit faster. You know, these news clips, I want to move through the information a little bit quickly.
With differing opinions right after I have the controversial ones. I would most certainly be open to doing that.
So Rogan pushed back against the term misinformation. He says his guests have an opinion that is different from the mainstream narrative and wanted to hear what their opinion is. Rogan said he books all the guests himself and doesn't always prepare before their conversations, but he promised to do more research in the future to balance things out. This comes as Spotify, who has the exclusive rights to Rogan's podcast, is facing criticism for the partnership. Spotify's CEO now says his company has a critical role in balancing artist expression with the safety of users. He writes, in part, it is important to me that we don't take on the position of being content censor while also making sure that there are rules in place and consequences for those who violate them.
So there you have the opening, the opportunity where Spotify says, hey, we've got to do something to make sure we protect the audience from this thing called misinformation. So I feel like this was the crack in the armor that has allowed this to continue to move forward in this direction.
Company is working to add a content advisory to any podcast episode that includes discussions of COVID.
It's so stupid. And it's so stupid because, by the way, they also have exclusive deal with Meghan Markle, Prince Harry. They got upset about this. They were concerned about Rogan. And, you know, anyway.
Joni Mitchell says she's pulling her music off the platform. Yeah. So, I mean, it is getting a reaction, and they're trying to deal with it. But they're trying to deal with a situation that they made a decision purely based on money.
Yeah, and it's funny. Again, there's all these appeals to the authority, right? It's like Prince Harry and Meghan. Okay, they're angry about it. Then we know this has got to be bad news. Oh, here's all these aging rock stars who aren't super relevant anymore. They're important. We got to make sure, you know, we got to make sure we satisfy them.
Paying for it.
It's out in the mirror. So let's separate the two statements. Let's separate what Joe Rogan said and what Spotify said. What Spotify said was a total cop out. I mean, when they go, oh, we're going to label any discussion about COVID. No, you don't have to label any discussion about COVID. I mean, you just label the garbage discussions where people are coming on with conspiracy theories and talking about ivermectin and talking about all these other things that medical community.
What do you have against ivermectin?
Spewing conspiracy.
What was that?
You said, what do you got against ivermectin, man? That helped me. Seriously. That's a Nobel Prize winning drug that's been prescribed to millions of people on multiple continents, and it's worked great. It works so good that we treat horses with it.
Yeah, and I don't want to, I mean, get us totally canceled, but you know, I think you actually even have a story on our TikTok people can check out if they want to find out more about this treatment.
Well, we're not too worried about being canceled. But go ahead.
I think our video did get shut down on Facebook, though, by the way, as we're doing this.
Which one? Which video?
Maybe you should go ahead.
Our live stream. I think we got kicked from Facebook while we're doing this live stream. Just FYI.
Yikes.
Maybe put a warning there. Maybe not so if Scott Gottlieb's on there. I think we're good if Gottlieb's on there and if other people.
Oh, we're still on, dude. I just clicked on. We're good. We're on.
Science and guided by medicine. That's quite different. So for Spotify to say, oh, we're going to warn everybody if there's ever a discussion on COVID. That is such a cop-out by Spotify.
Yeah, the both sidesism is hard to take. And in fact, by putting a warning label on all COVID discussion, well, all you've done there is elevate Joe Rogan further. You're saying what he is spouting is equivalent to what, hey, Dr. Scott Gottlieb or the like is saying. It's a total cop-out. And as much as they're clearly giving into a little bit of pressure here, Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, a number of artists and big-time podcasters are pulling their content from Spotify or threatening to do so. And that, of course, affects Spotify's bottom line. They're clearly not willing to get rid of one of their big moneymakers, Joe Rogan. As distasteful as his opinions are, he's a phenomenon. He's extremely popular. A lot of people listen, and Spotify's clearly afraid of him and his audience. And it certainly...
So there you have it. I just wanted to kind of get into this a little bit around how the regime media has, you know, talked about this, framed this up. And, you know, there they are talking about, you know, how distasteful Joe Rogan is. You know, clearly he's popular, right? And so these guys don't understand, or they are scared of the fact that people resonate with Joe Rogan. Like, they are not the gatekeepers of information anymore, and it freaking them out. And so you see,
I mean,
this-
just like they were worried about people voting for Trump, how when you're inside the beltway and you're on these, you know, you're on the coasts and this is your bubble, they can't comprehend it. They still can't. They're never going to learn, you know, never going to learn. And so how you can not think the vaccine is absolutely necessary and you have to get it and everybody has to get it. I don't think they can understand that, because nobody around them espouses that. And it's just more of the same, and it's just getting worse. And now it's not even into politics anymore. It's into a private guy who talks to people. Right. And we are still on Facebook, by the way. I'm watching it.
Yeah. Well, I just saw on Steve Owens, I'll bring this back up. It's covering our faces up, but that's okay. he's talking about how Spotify is receiving pressure from the government. They know they'll be shut down if the DHS gets involved. You know, they have to take some measures. And so this is going to feed into what we're going to cover when we talk about, you know, again, we're just recapping right now, guys. We're working through this. We're going to show you the bombshell here in a moment. But this is going to lead us up to something that Jen Psaki said a couple of days ago that feeds into this whole thing and that gets you to really understand what's happening here. So I did want to play this clip from CNN. This is a short one, but there's some things here that also is going to be CNN sort of showing their hand again and what they think about this whole situation.
The narrative is, I want to show all kinds of opinions.
Sorry, hang on.
The narrative is, I want to show all kinds of opinions.
Which sounds great, but not all opinions are created equal. You think about major newsrooms like CNN that have health departments and desks and operations that work hard on verifying information on COVID-19. And then you have talk show stars like Joe Rogan who just wing it, who make it up as they go along. And because figures like Rogan are trusted by people that don't trust real newsrooms, we have attention, a problem that's much bigger than Spotify, much bigger than any single platform, Kate. But that's what is the heart of this right now.
Yeah, but you're right. It is getting bigger.
I just want to say in the last month, we have heard multiple people in CNN, in that legitimate CNN newsroom where they have health experts, be arrested for like pedophilia and improper relationships with minors. And now the president had to resign because of his relationship, which that's not on the same level as pedophilia or, you know, right, crimes against children. But it's like, that is who did Brian Stelter cover that? Did he talk about the literal child abuser, groomer, pedophiles inside that building that he works? So he's in the same month that we find out the news is not just fake and a puppet of the regime, right? They are literally evil. They are literally full with people who harm children, that hurt children. And it's no surprise for people like me and you. But, you know, that's just another, that's why people don't trust them. You know, they're actively harmful to humanity. I mean, Trump said 5 years ago, enemy of the people. I think it's worse. I think it's worse now.
Well, look, we don't have to look far into history to ask yourself, look at the coverage that's happening over Joe Rogan, his misinformation, and Jeffrey Epstein in the Maxwell case from the mainstream media. That tells you everything you need to know about, you know, who's protecting who and who cares about the safety of people, right? It's totally ridiculous. And Brian Stelter here is like, not all news is created equal. The insinuation being CNN is the real news. And this guy is a random podcaster who doesn't deserve to be listened to with the same credibility as the CNNs of the world. That's what he's saying here. Talking about how Joe Rogan just wings it, but you know, CNN's got this, you know, dedicated news desk. You know, what I would say is that the dedicated news desk is just simply the place where they produce the regime certified talking points that they feed to Mr. Potato Head over here, who delivers those from a teleprompter with all of the self-righteousness and passion that he does, right? But Brian Stelter is not out there doing the hard investigative journalistic work.
He's a media critic. He's CNN's media critic. I mean, he's in no position to say this. And their news desk, to your point, I mean, you know, comparisons to 1984 is so overdone. But it's like, to me, it is the Ministry of Truth. I mean, that's what's happening there. It's the Ministry of Truth. We know it all. All truth comes from us, and it's all just manufactured. It's all fake. For the most part. I used to say it's not all fake, you know, they still have some good people or whatever. I think now I'm just going to say it's all fake. I'm going to assume it's fake. And if they happen to get a couple things right, okay.
Yeah.
That doesn't change my opinion that it's all fake completely.
Well, and what we're going to do is we're going to transition here to answer some of the folks who may be saying to themselves, well, listen, it's a private company. It's not true censorship. It's not First Amendment problem here because the government isn't doing the censoring. Well, I think the thing we need to understand is that the government is going to do everything they can to apply pressure to get these big companies to do what they want and censor who they want. Okay. without actually having to do the direct censoring. And so this is what is at play, is that if the federal government applies pressure and has the ability to penalize these companies in substantial ways, you know, it's soft coercion if it isn't direct coercion. Listen to what Jen Psaki had to say when asked about this situation.
Last week, the Surgeon General also was asked on MSNBC about Joe Rogan's vaccine comments on Spotify, and he said that tech companies have an important role to play in stopping misinformation because they are the predominant places where misinformation spreads. Does the White House and the administration think this is a satisfactory step?
Our hope is that all major tech platforms and all major news sources, for that matter, be responsible and be vigilant to ensure the American people have access to accurate information on something as significant as COVID-19. That certainly includes Spotify. So this disclaimer, it's a positive step, but we want every platform to continue doing more to call out mis and disinformation while also uplifting accurate information. Yeah. It's
again
positive step, but there's more that can be done.
Yes. So here we have it. Okay. It's a positive step, but there's more that can be done. The positive step was to label the misinformation. Okay. Now that label is going to be applied to Peter McCullough and Robert Malone, not Dr. Sanjay Gupta. Okay. Let's be clear about that. It's only going to be applied to the counter narrative guests. All right. That's a positive step. But what Psaki is saying is more can be done. Well, what's the more that can be done? They can get rid of Rogan. They can take him off of the platform. That's the end goal. That's what they're hoping to do. And, you know, I imagine Joe Rogan's pretty surprised that he's become such a, you know, controversial like figure in this whole like story, don't you think?
I think so. And the thing is, I don't think he's not an ideologically pure guy. So I'm concerned that he will bend, you know, to the pressure, want to stay in everyone's good graces, want to stay liked. He does seem to be kind of defending himself. Now, I don't like the apologies coming out of his mouth, but I understand he's probably a decent dude. I hear from a lot of people that have opined on him that know him, that he's a good guy, you know, a mashup of the N-word, of him saying the N-word, comes out and, you know, he apologizes. So, you know, his responses haven't been ideal or perfect, but, you know, he's a dude caught in a firestorm, and I don't know that he has a firm foundation of what it is he believes. But at the same time, because of his background being MMA guy, maybe he's just going to do a, hey, screw you. I'm going to go all in on this. And if I lose Spotify, well, hey, he was popular before Spotify. He's bigger now. Yeah, Spotify was his 3-year jump, or however, I don't know how long he's been on Spotify. I can't remember when that news came down, but if Spotify was his jump into now the mainstream and higher heights, I think he's still got a huge growth potential if he keeps doing what he's doing. So really quick, I know you got a comment on the screen. If their end game is to get him deplatformed on Spotify, if that's it, like that may or may not happen. I don't know that really matters, other than it sucks when those people get a win.
Yeah,
because now what could happen is if you could take Rogan out from a mainstream podcast source, you could take anybody out, and now Apple and Google have cover to say, okay, we're going to write in our laws now, our app store laws. Now that that's happened, nobody else ever gets to do that again. And so I mean, it does matter, but for him specifically, he's not going to go away.
Yeah, and you're hitting on something. You know, I just wanted to pull up Richie's comment, top misinformation peddlers accusing Joe Rogan of spreading misinformation. Okay, yeah, 100%.
I love that, icon too. That was a great icon.
Yeah. So, but I did want to say, you touched on something that many people don't really understand, is that this whole debate also involves another layer of tech companies that can try to get Spotify to act. So Google and Apple, they have control over what is in their app stores. I'm not sure about Google how it works. I'm an Apple phone user. But Apple, they can absolutely put pressure on Spotify and say, hey, listen, you have a guy on Spotify that is saying things that goes against our terms of service. Therefore, you cannot have your app in the app store unless you get rid of that guy. That absolutely can happen. It's part of the reason why I believe And Jason Miller talked about this and the whole dust up around Gab and Getter that we covered in our last episode, is that it's the terms of service from these app stores that are why some of these platforms are preemptively banning people like Nick Fuentes, right? Because if you're not in the app store, like, you might as well not exist for a lot of people. And so that's another kind of pressure that's coming against them. It's not just, you know, okay, the musicians, it's not just the government, it's also the tech infrastructure that these companies rely on. And so when we get into this final, you know, thing, which was the topic of discussion today, is the insinuation that the DHS has labeled Joe Rogan a terror threat. Well, listen, the reason I'm saying that that's true is because that's what it says essentially in this bulletin that was published just yesterday. This bulletin will expire on June 7th, 2022. So this is going to be in action for a while. Okay. This is what the Department of Homeland Security says. Summary of the terrorism threat to the United States. The United States remains in a heightened threat environment fueled by several factors, including an online environment filled with false or misleading narratives and conspiracy theories and other forms of mis, dis, and malinformation, also known as MDM, they have a term for it, introduced and or amplified by foreign and domestic threat actors. Okay. Misinformation is something that the Department of Homeland Security feels needs to be dealt with, and that it's keeping the United States in a heightened threat environment, and that there are domestic threat actors who are amplifying or introducing what the government calls misinformation.
I mean, I read this as a declaration of war on American citizens. I really do. We came off fairly recently, the Department of Justice looking into parents that were speaking back at school board meetings, and they put a bulletin out about that after January 6th, of course. The entire narrative around that from the regime and the media has been about how that was an insurrection, how that was, you know, homegrown terrorism when they walked inside the Capitol and took selfies.
Yep.
So this is just another level of that, another level of government saying that the problem with terrorism in the United States is not, you know, not Al Qaeda or ISIS kind of, you know, grooming people overseas to come here and create a terrorist attack. It's not these traditional things that we think about terrorism. It's literally your grandma and your grandpa on Facebook or on Instagram sharing videos from guys like Joe Rogan, who have guys like Dr. Robert Malone telling you maybe this thing isn't safe that you're putting in your body. That's really it. And that's just that's appalling on, yeah, on so many levels.
But here's what's interesting as well. Here's one of the things they say is so dangerous. It says these threat actors seek to exacerbate social friction and sow discord and undermine public trust in government institutions to encourage unrest, which could potentially inspire acts of violence. Okay, that is broad as could be. So people who are exacerbating social friction, that what is that? Creating social friction between people or different groups, sowing discord and undermining public trust in government institutions. Like, number one, the number one underminer of public trust in government institutions are the government institutions. We've seen that over the last 2 years.
Absolutely.
But this is making it a terrorist threat to undermine public trust in government institutions. Doesn't matter if those government institutions are filled with liars or are deceiving the American public about a number of issues. You know, no, we've got to make sure we bolster public trust in government institutions. And then it says, which could potentially inspire acts of violence.
Yeah, that's the crazy sentence there. So the government is so untrustworthy because of how it operates. It operates in the shadows. It does things like put people on no-fly lists who have committed no crime, seize their money. They act within impunity. You know, like the Capitol Police is now investigating members of Congress, like,
yep,
secretly, like the government, the FBI. I mean, the whole history of the FBI and CIA that you could point to that we know that aren't conspiracy theories. And right now, you have, you're being lied to every time you turn on the television, every time you listen to a government source. You're being lied to, and you know you're being lied to. So you want to talk about public trust? I mean, you the mistrust comes from the source, but then you want to say, so we're not like, I don't know. I feel people shouldn't trust the government. I think that's because they're untrustworthy. I'm not doing anything extra other than telling, you know, reporting on stuff. We're talking about stuff here. But then it says, which could potentially inspire acts of violence. We don't have anything historically that shows that violence is coming from right wingers who don't trust government at all. You look at the Oklahoma City bombing, go back to the 90s. They investigated the hell out of it. They wanted to tie Timothy McVeigh to some group or some white supremacy or some hardcore white ring. They couldn't do it. It was an isolated, a troubled guy who had a specific problem, and he committed mass murder, which was terrible. But right. you look at all these things. They can never do it. They can never do it. But you know, this is a way they're sowing discord with this. It's ironic, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's crazy because they dig deeper into this a little bit. They say the primary terrorism-related threat to the United States continues to stem from lone offenders or small cells of individuals who are motivated by a range of foreign and or domestic grievances, often cultivated through the consumption of certain online content.
That sounds like Antifa to me, but right, that's not who they're talking about, right?
Hey, listen, you know, it is broad enough to, you know, maybe throw a prosecution or two at an Antifa member the next time they, you know, set fire to a courthouse. But, you know, the regime in charge will be able to, you know, use their judgment as to which domestic terror groups that they're going to prosecute first, you know, starting with podcasters. And so it's like it continues talking about this, where it says the convergence of violent extremist ideologies, false or misleading narratives. Okay. Guys, we're getting into what they want to talk about when it comes to the election, January 6th, okay? Conspiracy theories, it talks how these are contributing to a heightened threat of violence. And so these key factors, I just want to hit real briefly, the proliferation of false or misleading narratives which sow discord or undermine public trust in the government institutions, okay? Talks about this. Then it goes on and talks about continued calls for violence directed at U.S. critical infrastructure, soft targets and mass gatherings, faith-based institutions such as churches, synagogues, and mosques, institutions of higher education, racial and religious minorities, government facilities and personnel, including law enforcement, the military, the media, and perceived ideological opponents. What's not covered there? Okay. This also includes, like you said, institutions of higher education. Hey, that includes the school board parents. They're part of this. There's your domestic terrorist school board parents. I mean, this is a massive umbrella to try to cast a net to pull people into this idea that they may be a terrorist threat.
Well, here's another problem. I don't know if you saw the video this week of State Department official Ned, I can't remember his full name, getting grilled by a reporter, like you know, the reporter did a great job, and he was at, like, basically it was about the threat of Russia moving in, and in Ukraine it was regarding that conflict, and the reporter was just like, where's the evidence, Ned? I've been doing this for 30 years. And he's like, well, I just told you what has been unclassified. And he's like, so the evidence is you, a spokesoul for the government, just telling us? And he's like, well, he was so flustered. He's like, well, I expect some documentation, show something. Like, finally, some journalists are like, show something. If we're going to go to war, show something, right? I look at this bulletin. Okay, when we were worried about Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and we were worried about foreign terrorists, and you put out a bulletin like that 20 years ago, 15 years ago, maybe we could just trust the government that was a worry, and we didn't have to worry about it here. But now that you have completely realigned and are razor focused on my mom and, you know, our parents and grandparents and you know, other people in our lives, our friends, that's the time where I don't think you're just allowed to do this anymore. You got to show proof. And most people probably are looking at this. I would say most reasonable people are looking at this and going, bullshit. Nothing here is real. And they're not, this is like, you know, this is intelligence. We can't release where we know this from. Where are you getting this from? Where are you getting this from? I don't believe a word of this at all. I'm going to say it. I don't believe the Department of Homeland Security, which shouldn't exist and should have never been created.
Right.
Yeah. I don't believe any word of this. And they have the cover to not have to ever prove it. And the question is going to be, are we going to hold their feet to the fire and make them realize the political repercussions of coming out with something so ridiculous? And I don't know if that's going to come through a leader, through a Republican president, through members of conservative members of Congress who are going to say, this is absolutely ridiculous. Like, we can't be doing this. But I mean, this is crazy. This is so broad and so vague as to include anybody who acknowledges the fraud in the election. Like, there was fraud in the election. There was. There is in every election, but like, we're talking about what kind of fraud, right? Yes. That's what the conversation has always been, how much of the fraud matters, right? But now it's like, oh, you can't talk about it. And what's ironic is, you know, Biden 2 weeks ago said the next election this year is going to be illegitimate unless you pass my bill.
Yeah.
So is it coming from us, or is it, it's coming from the governor, the head of state himself?
It's great, Paul, because what you've touched on and what you've opened up is how, like, this is sort of just more evil spawn of the Jan 6 narrative, right? See, Jan 6 happened, and the regime narrative around it was to take those people and call them insurrectionists, domestic violence, domestic terrorism, all of that, okay? And so everybody who's on that side of the aisle is now a domestic terrorist, is a domestic threat. Okay, great. Then they took that same type of stuff and threw it at who? Oh, parents who started showing up at school boards to, you know, they're mad about what, because school's been happening in Zoom. And so they've started to see what their kids were getting taught. And they started showing up to school boards and they're like, what is happening here? And so then they're called domestic terrorists, okay? And now you've got the trucker convoy up in Canada, and what are they calling those guys? Violence, insurrectionists, all of that same playbook, okay? Now they're applying it to podcasters. People who create online content are domestic threats. Why? Because they're undermining, you know, faith in the U.S. institutions. So This is one of the reasons why we've been so adamant about why the J6 narrative has to be exposed for what it is, and why we have put time and resources and been getting canceled left and right to make our film Q Sent Me at QSentMeMovie.com and The Steal at TheSteal.com, because we're going headlong into these two twin narratives that the regime doesn't, they need those narratives to push forward the persecution and prosecution of peaceful American patriots under this big umbrella of domestic terror threat.
Yeah. And I mean, if you read it, we're making these movies that you mentioned that touch on election integrity, election fraud around the 2020 election, and those who were fighting against it and what they were doing. It's a true documentary in the sense that we were there documenting it, talking to the people that were in charge of it and rallying people up, getting the word out, because they felt, you know, they felt that their democracy was being stolen from them. And when you feel like your democracy is being stolen from them, you're not just going to say, okay, you know, try next time. Let's just pack it in, guys. I mean, you're going to act. And that happens throughout societies, all countries, when you see that. There's nothing really uniquely American about that. And so just reading this terror bulletin, which may or may not actually, suspend on June 7th of this year, 4 months, it's like we would be included in people that are a terrorist threat to the United States by talking about it in a way that counters the narrative, talking to the people who were leading the fight against the government, against bad actors within the government, and wanting a public and fair hearing about their grievances, which they never got, you know, which they never got for reasons we will explore, of course. But it's like, come on, are we terrorists? I mean, number one, we're not terrorist sympathizers, but we may be entering a world where anybody who does what we do are at the very least seen as aligned with terrorists, which is absolutely crazy. And yes. And that's when you know your government is probably corrupt beyond saving at the point.
You know, it's really funny because I just noticed here in this document that it says, hey, the NTAS bulletin issued on November 10th, 2021 and set to expire on February 8th, 2022 is hereby canceled. So this is actually an update to a previous memo that was issued. And what I would have you know is if we pull up that other previous memo, this is more detailed. This is actually expanded on and got added a little bit of granularity to in this whole misinformation dimension of it. I believe I have the language of that other document pulled up in front of me right now. I'm not screen sharing it, but looks like the big change to this is the broad misinformation dimension. And so I think that's the thing we really need to look at and need to recognize is happening here. And I will also say, if you click on this link about mis, dis, and malinformation, there's a whole portal of information about what they call misinformation, disinformation, malinformation. There's a series of training videos. And I almost would want to take a whole nother episode to talk about those. I started watching one of them. And one of them's getting totally into what? Election integrity, election security. How to identify the threats to election integrity. And listen, they're not coming from the places you might think, you know. And so it's funny because in the video, I started watching it, and what it says in the video is, we know there was Russian interference in 2016. Then it says, we know there wasn't in 2020. It's like, it's crazy. It's like they're doubling down on narratives that have been debunked.
Well, here's the problem about 2016. It was told that there was such a high level of Russian interference that's the reason we were stuck with President Trump, and we completely yes. investigated that, and the narrative that was sold to us was entirely bogus. And so what did we find up finding out that might prove that point correct? Was there Russian interference? Like even both sides even back then said, of course they try. They're going to try to do something. It turned out that they had a couple $100,000 Facebook spend, and yes. there were some bot farms. That's yes. not enough. No realistic person looked at that and said that swayed any even small election at all. It was a couple $100,000 Facebook spend, and really it's on Facebook to do the work to not allow clients that are circumventing the US law on who can spend money on elections. Facebook screwed up on that, right? So that's great. That's all we have. That's all that we have that's, I guess, provable. And I'm willing to believe that. But that was not what was sold to us at all. So, you know, that's to say that there was no interference in 2020 by Russia. I mean, it's possible there wasn't, but just framing it up that way is the problem.
Yeah. And it's also what's funny about how they're framing up the elections upcoming, you know, and, you know, we know this, we've been looking into it for a long time and talking about it, but it's like, and a lot of people are waking up to this now, is it's like, yeah, the elections are illegitimate and insecure when the outcome isn't what the establishment wants. And when the outcome isn't what the establishment wants. They're like, yeah, this has been great. No problems. Most secure election in history, fortifying democracy. We write Time Magazine articles about it. But listen, I do want to wrap up here at about the hour point. You know, this is a massive story. This is a big deal. This is the expansion of what we have seen the war on American citizens, the war on American patriots. It's what Tucker Carlson's Patriot Purge got into, that we contributed footage to and we shot content for. It's what our documentaries, Q Sent Me and The Steel, we're going to get into this. All right. But what we really want to highlight is that it isn't just, you know, Trump supporters or American patriots or people who are into freedom and liberty. They're targeting Joe Rogan, who is not right wing. You know, somebody put out a list of the different guests that he's had on, and some of the people that they listed as right wing on the list of guests to try to say, oh, Joe Rogan's so right wing. It was laughable, right? He's a guy who supported Bernie Sanders in the primary. So, you know, what many people did was they kind of ignored or laughed at the Department of Justice weaponizing January 6th to prosecute political enemies. A lot of people were like, okay, yeah, fine. January 6th protesters deserved it. They shouldn't have went in the Capitol, you know, all of that. Oh, they're MAGA supporters. I don't care. Well, now it's coming back around, and it's still under the administration of the Joe Biden administration. Now they want to expand it and be able to pull people like Joe Rogan and other podcasters into this net. Okay. People who aren't on the right, people who aren't MAGA. And for those who are on the left who don't recognize or understand how this is potentially going to come back around and bite them in the butt at some point, well, I don't know what to tell you, but I do think it is time for a transpartisan coalition of people who love freedom, who love liberty, who have a priority of personal freedom and really believe in my body, my choice when it comes to things like vaccines, when it comes to things like being thrown in prison without due process and without bail because you went to a peaceful protest in Washington, D.C. Those of us need to get together. We need to get aligned. We need to spread this information. We need to double down. Even though we've been canceled many, many times, I'm the most canceled filmmaker in America. We're still going out here and preaching the truth, and we hope you will help and spread and share it with us. Check out the podcast. We're launching it. Continue to keep launching more episodes. Check us out at cancelproof.tv. Check out our films at thesteel.com and qsentmemovie.com. Paul, do you have any other thoughts to wrap this episode up for us today?
You know, just while you were talking there, this idea that Joe Rogan has more right-wing guests on, or more, you know, he's more conservative aligned, is that makes sense, because he is making an effort to have conversations with people that are not happening in the mainstream. And so you're not going to probably get a lot of, you know, you're not going to get the same guys that are already going on CNN or that are official government sources. You can get that information already. It's already out there. It's allowed on YouTube, right? It's allowed on Twitter. You have a bunch of people that are like Malone, expert. He like created mRNA vaccine, or he was behind the creation of the technology. Now they want to say that's not even true. That's actually true. He was. He has patents on it, tens of patents. Like, that guy is not allowed on social media. Joe Rogan wanted to talk to him. So now that we're in this environment we're in, yeah, you're going to get more right wing or conservative, anti-establishment or anti-regime people, you know, if he keeps his show the same way, because that's what we're not hearing about. And that's what his audience wants to hear about. They can go listen to Sanjay Gupta and Anderson Cooper and Brian Stelter and, you know, the head of HHS. They can do that on NBC or ABC every Sunday morning.
Yeah. There's no shortage of places to get the regime talking points. So that's for sure. Please check us out on Spotify. We are still there. And on iTunes, on Rumble is where you'll catch our videos. And we look forward to talking to you guys again soon. Thanks.